Welcome to the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, where it's all about slashing your debt, slashing your taxes, and creating a liberated lifestyle. And now, your host, who met his wife while training for the 400 meters in Seattle and is eating gluten-free whilst lusting after bread, Dave Denniston.
This is Dave Denniston, and welcome to the Tax Reduction and Freedom Month and my latest episode of the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast. Well, this month we're talking a lot about taxes and what physicians can do to tackle tough tax issues. Well, we all know dealing with the IRS can royally suck, and that's why our next guest has been kind enough to join us. Dan Pilla is someone that I personally regard as a true expert. He's a writer, he's a speaker, and yet he's really down to earth. As a matter of fact, he's helped hundreds of thousands of citizens solve personal and business tax and financial problems that they otherwise might not have been able to solve on their own. He's an author of 14 books. He's had dozens of research reports and hundreds of articles. As a matter of fact, his work is regularly featured on all kinds of radio and TV, as well as newspapers, including media appearances on CNN, CBS, CNBC, Fox News, and many, many, many more. The Associated Press actually said that Dan Pilla probably knows more about the IRS than the commissioner. Although I have to tell you, Dan may tell you that this might be a pretty easy accomplishment for at least some people in that organization. Anyhow, the Wall Street Journal ranked his book, The IRS Problem Solver, as the number one tax book in America. And beyond all that, Dan is the executive director of the Tax Freedom Institute, which is a national association of tax professionals. Well, welcome, Dan.
Well, thanks for having me, Dave.
Well, hey, so glad you're here. Well, first, tell us a bit about you. What's inspired you to do what you do?
Well, yeah, I got started in this business in the late 1970s as a result of problems my father had with the IRS. He had a small business in St. Paul, our hometown, St. Paul, Minnesota. Got behind on his employees' taxes, the employment taxes that arise when you have employees. Anybody with a business knows what those are. And in the early 1970s, my dad got behind on those taxes, and the IRS came in 1974, Dave, and they padlocked the doors on his shop, and they ended up auctioning the equipment off for a couple cents on the dollar. And then in 1978. Right in that period, they turned their attention to the family home, and they tried to seize and sell it for the back tax liability, and that's when I got involved. I came home one day, and my mom handed me this envelope from the IRS, and she says, what do you make of this? And I read through it, and I said, well, it looks like they're going to try to seize the house. And she said, well, what do we do about that? And, of course, I had no idea what to do, but what I did is I went over to the local law library, and I started fumbling around in the Internal Revenue Code, And Dave, I stumbled onto this one section of the tax code that deals with taxpayers' rights issues, and I started reading in that section of the code, and I didn't get six pages in to that section of the tax code and discovered that the IRS was proceeding illegally to seize my parents' home, my mother's home in particular. And so I did what any 18-year-old would do at the time. I sued the IRS, and I literally, cobbled together this Mickey Mouse lawsuit using the information that I saw in the law library, and I was able to file a lawsuit, and I was able to stop the IRS from taking the house, and I've been stopping them ever since. That's what got me started, and that's what kept me going.
That's awesome. So you did that without an attorney or any legal help, or just your own research?
Well, yeah, absolutely. In fact, I didn't even have any legal training at the time. I was just literally fumbling through the library and fumbling through the materials there and just following. It was basically cookbook procedures is what I followed.
Very cool. That's so unique and so awesome. And you and I met at a conference a couple of years ago, and I just loved your talk. I bought your book, The IRS Problem Solver, and I was recently rereading it, and I couldn't help but think of docs and those people that I work with. And a CPA friend of mine on a recent podcast noted that docs in particular are in the sweet spot when it comes to taxes. They're not making $1 million, but they're not making 50 or 100K.
Right.
And so I really think, docs are in this spot where they're targeted by people like the IRS. And you noted in the book that at the time, the IRS was spending $224 million to add nearly 3,000 new full-time employees. So tell us about that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we've heard a lot about the IRS having resources cut here in the last couple of years, and there's been some truth to that. But the fact of the matter is, where the IRS is cutting back in terms of quote unquote budget savings is not in the enforcement area. They still have full-fledged enforcement with audits and tax collection. Where they're cutting back, Dave, is with the number of taxpayer service options that are available now. You know, they just don't help people comply with the tax law the way they have in the past and the way they should be doing it. You know, the IRS's attitude, and this was expressed by former IRS Commissioner Margaret Richardson. She said at one point in time, if the IRS was ever to have to forced to make a choice between taxpayer service and tax law enforcement, enforcement would win out every time. So, you know, what she's saying is we would rather grind you into a powder if you mess up than help you get it right in the first place, and that's the attitude they have. Now, you know, over the years, I've been in this business over 30 years now, Dave, and I've dealt with a great deal of medical professionals, you know, medical professionals in really every walk of the medical profession. And what I see happen with these individuals is because they are so highly focused on their you know, their medical training, whatever aspect of the medical industry they're in, they're so highly focused and so highly trained on that aspect of their profession that they find it difficult, many of them find it difficult to deal with the business aspects of their practice in general, and of course taxes in particular. So unless they have an office manager or person that they you know, they can trust implicitly to handle those things, medical professionals very often get behind on their taxes, not because they don't have the money necessarily, but because they just can't keep their eye on the ball the way they should, because again of that intensive focus that's required in order to carry out their practices.
Well, and docs just don't have the time. I find, you know, they just tend to say, you know, you get something in the mail, which is kind of the next thing I wanted to bring up. You know, I got this computer generated notice. And you see this envelope, it's from the IRS, and this can be crazy scary. And so you get this letter in the mail, you're kind of cautioning and opening it up, and you wonder, oh, my God, what is this about? And in your book, you talk so much in great detail about these computer-generated notices.
Yeah, it's a big deal, because the fact of the matter is the IRS doesn't, even if the IRS got funded to the fullest extent that it wanted to be funded, and then some, you know, it certainly would never have the resources necessary to go audit every individual on a face-to-face basis. It'd just be impossible. I mean, just look at the numbers alone. There's 145, 146 million individual tax returns that are filed with the IRS here in 2015, and that's just the individual tax returns. That doesn't include the business returns, doesn't include the employment tax returns. When you add all those in, it's another 100 million, 110 million returns. So there's a tremendous number of tax returns filed with the IRS every year. They can't possibly audit every return in a face-to-face environment. They know that. We know that. And so they focus very, very intently on these computerized audits. And the percentage of computerized audits has exploded greatly over the last probably 10 years or so. In my latest book called How to Win Your Tax Audit, I have some of the statistics in that book that show the tremendous growth in the number of computer audits over the years, and they do this precisely because it is more efficient, and it's just obviously easier to reach more people, you know, through the quote unquote mail order business than it is door to door.
Well, what people do, I mean, most often, right? They just get out their checkbook and write the check. Or try and figure out some way to do it.
Couple things happen when you get one of these notices that say, "Dear taxpayer, you know, we looked at your tax return for the year 2012, let's say, and we found a mistake, but don't worry, we fixed it. You know, now you owe us $3,250. Well, you know, okay, what was the mistake? Often these notices don't tell you what the mistake is. They don't tell you, you know, what was supposedly fixed or what the problem was. When you call the phone numbers, you don't get any relief that way necessarily. Very uncommon, I should say, for the IRS to say, "Wow, this happened and that happened, and here's what the problem is." No, that's not the situation at all. And so, So what happens is very often people end up paying these, and of course, if you got the resources to just write the check, that's one thing. But unfortunately, most people don't have the resources to just write the check, and so these are the folks that end up with a collection problem that they're faced with, levies and tax liens and so on.
Well, what's scary that you talk about is it's almost like half of those correspondents are actually wrong. And
there's no question about that. This has been documented over and over and over again. I have extensive research in my book, the book that you mentioned, The IRS Problem Solver, extensive research in that book about the error rates in these notices. But it's really even worse than that. It's not just that the notices are wrong half the time, which is bad enough because they are. But the other part of the problem is people simply do not know how to deal with them. And this is something that I've been saying for years, that the IRS simply does not tell the truth when it comes to taxpayers' rights. They don't tell the truth when it comes to the options that people have for dealing with the IRS. I've said this for years, that the IRS doesn't tell the truth. Well, I'll tell you, in 2013, the National Taxpayer Advocate issued its annual report to Congress, and in that report, she talked very specifically about taxpayers' rights in that particular report. And she said, this is a quote now, she said, "Most taxpayers have no idea what their rights are and therefore can't take advantage of them." And then even worse, she went on to say that IRS employees do not clearly communicate these rights to taxpayers at appropriate times. So this is 100% consistent with what I've been saying for 30-plus years, and that is you have rights, but people don't know what they are, and the IRS doesn't tell you what they are.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so, you know, if any of you that are listening to this podcast get a notice in the mail from the IRS, you know, you really want to stop. Don't just write that check. You know, take some time to think about what is this and to get more information. Can you think, Dan, of any situations with healthcare professionals where, you know, they get these notices, they mishandle it, and, you know, just get in the cycle of bad stuff happening?
Well, you know, as I said, with healthcare professionals, what we're dealing with is a group of people that are so highly focused on their practice because of their skills and their training have taken so long to develop, and their time is so precious that often they don't spend the time necessary to deal with the notices. They might see the notice and I think this is true, that the what happens part is true almost across the board, whether we're dealing with a medical professional or a plumber or a housewife or whatever. You know, when people don't know what to do, they often do nothing, which is the exact wrong thing to do when you're dealing with the IRS. You know, the thing that's important to understand is whenever you get any notice from the Internal Revenue Service, that notice carries with it specific rights that you have to challenge whatever it is the IRS has done. However, your rights are time sensitive. You've got to exercise those rights within a fixed period of time, and if you don't, your rights expire. And it becomes more difficult, almost never impossible, but more difficult to deal with the situation when you have let important deadlines go by. So, you know, It's important to, if you're not going to deal with it yourself directly because of the time constraints that you have and so forth, you need to get somebody to deal with it on your behalf so that your rights don't expire, so that you take advantage of the appeal options that you have to protect your interests along the way. That's a critical thing right there.
Well, I think in the book and several of your publications, I mean, you have so many helpful, really good hints, tips, and tricks. And one of them that I think many people should be aware of is something called the individual master file. What is that, and when could people need it?
Yeah, well, you know, first of all, let's start with your first question, what it is. The individual master file is the computerized account record that the IRS keeps for every person for every tax year. The individual master file records, for example, the date that your tax return was received by the IRS, the amount of tax liability that was assessed per the return. If the IRS went through, did an audit, it'll show you the amount of tax liability that was assessed per the audit, when it was assessed. It will show you how much money was paid through wage withholding or estimated payments or refund offset. In other words, it's a complete account history or account transcript of what happened for that particular tax year and when it happened. So it gives us great insight into what the IRS did or didn't do in a particular case, and for that matter, what the taxpayer did or didn't do. You know, I'm dealing with people that have tax problems that, for example, haven't filed tax returns in a couple years. And they'll say to me, well, Dan, I don't know when the last time is that I filed a tax return. Okay, if that's the case, then we get individual master file transcripts, and it tells us what returns were filed and which returns were not filed. If a person doesn't have information on how much withholding was taken out of his paycheck in a particular year, these transcripts can tell us not only the amount of the withholding, but the source of the withholding as well. In other words, maybe a person had two or three jobs, or maybe a person was a 1099 worker, like a lot of medical professionals are. They work for different clinics, let's say, or hospitals, and so they get 1099 by the hospital or the clinic. And so we can get the 1099s from the IRS to show exactly who paid you and exactly how much they paid you, and all of this information is available in these transcripts. Now, the question of when to get them, you know, I think it's a good idea to monitor these transcripts on basically an ongoing basis, because for one thing, you know, the post office loses mail all of the time. Most people don't file their tax returns by certified mail. They just send them regular mail, which I think is a mistake. I think you should file this stuff by certified mail,
right,
with return receipt requested, because the burden of proof is on you to show that you filed your tax return. And so, you know, if there's no tax return filed, there's no statute of limitations on the IRS's right to go back and secure that return and assess the tax. So, you know, if they go back 5 years from now, let's say, and they claim that you didn't file your tax return, well, you got to prove that you did. So, you know, if you're monitoring these transcripts, you can see if there's a mistake there someplace, you know, you can react to it before it becomes a problem that gets out of control. Likewise, if you have a tax problem, if you're dealing with an enforcement issue, you know, these transcripts are vital because it gives us the information we need to know about assessment dates and if the IRS filed tax liens and if they've issued certain required notices to the taxpayer and so on. So there's all kinds of advantages to having this stuff.
Cool. And one of the other things that I love about your book, which everyone should have because it has templates. You know, these are letters that you have in there, and it's like finding gold where people can use it. You know, they can plug and play when they have a given situation, which you have. I don't even know how many do you have, Dan. You're like 100?
I don't know how many there are either, but there's dozens of them in there for sure. And these are the sample letters that I show you, that I provide to you to show you exactly how to respond to the various notices that the IRS mails out.
And do you think, if you could point one out in particular, or maybe two out, you know, what do you think people miss out on with these templates? You know, which ones would you say are the most important? I know they're all your babies.
Well, yeah, but I mean, let's give two examples here, okay? The first one is just generally speaking the response to the IRS's letter where they, you know, we talked about it earlier in the program here, where the IRS writes this letter and says, dear taxpayer, you made a mistake on your tax return. We fixed it. Don't worry. Now you owe us the money, right? Well, there's a response to that. And first of all, people make the mistake of calling the IRS. You can't call the IRS with these things. You got to respond in writing. And the law is perfectly clear, Dave, that if you respond within 30 days of the, or I'm sorry, 60 days, within 60 days of the date of the notice, the IRS is required by law to set aside the assessment as though it never existed. And in other words, once you respond and you tell them, I disagree, I demand an abatement of the tax liability, they have to set it aside. It's not discretionary. You know, it's not a matter of, well, let's do an investigation and see if this is okay. No, they got to set it aside. They got to cancel it. And now if they believe that you really owe the money, that you really made a mistake, they've got to send a letter called a notice of deficiency, which gives you an opportunity to appeal before you've got before you have to part with a nickel's worth of your money. So I give you the template for this letter so there's no confusion. I show you exactly how to make this response so that it's done correctly and on time. The second example, Dave, is probably one of the most important things that, every single listener here this morning needs to know about, and that is the right to challenge penalties. You know, the one of the biggest things that we see with the Internal Revenue Service year after year after year is the assessment of penalties against individuals and businesses. As I said, there's going to be about 146 million tax returns filed this year. The IRS is going to assess upwards of 40 million penalties against individuals and businesses. I mean, that's almost one out of every three people being hit with a penalty of some kind. And in the book, I've got an entire chapter that deals specifically with penalties, and I give you all kinds of sample letters there that show you how to respond to get the penalties canceled. What the IRS doesn't tell you, consistent with what the taxpayer advocate's testimony to Congress was, what the IRS doesn't tell you is exactly how to get these penalties canceled, and the book takes you right through that.
And just to get back to healthcare professionals and docs in particular, outside of what we've been talking about so far, what do you think you find, you know, that people are having, doctors are having to correct, the biggest mistake you see them making?
Well, I'll tell you what happens with medical professionals in my experience is they get sucked into these tax schemes that promise a reduction of tax liability. You know, I see this over and over again, and it happens with medical professionals, of course, because we got two things going on here. We got high-dollar individuals. As you said, they might not be making $1 million, but they're probably making north of $100,000 or in many cases north of $200,000. So they're high-income people by definition. You know, certainly the top 5% of income earners, and in many cases the top 1%, no doubt about that. You know, keep in mind that the top 5% of income earners in the United States make more than about $140,000, so it's not that difficult, you know, to be in the top 5% these days, mathematically speaking. I'm not talking about effort. It takes a heck of a lot of effort, but mathematically speaking, you get up there pretty quickly. And so, you know, these people then, these medical professionals that are in that income bracket become targets for promoters that come along and say, well, if you set up this trust situation or you set up this LLC situation or you set up this you know, quote-unquote investment situation that we have over here, we've got this plan that'll do this for you and it'll do that for you and it'll save you all this taxes. Well, you know, again, these medical professionals, they've got the high dollars that make them a target and give them the capacity to, quote-unquote, invest in these things. But then secondly, you've got the problem of, because they're so focused on their profession and their practice, and because they're so you know, their time is so precious, they don't have the opportunity to really study these things the way they should. They end up getting themselves in trouble with the IRS because these things are often scams, and I see that a lot with medical professionals, an awful lot.
Oh, it's like a Ponzi scheme, really.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, it depends on what we're talking about, but they end up with a pig and a poke, and then plus a tax problem on top of it.
Yeah, I had the one particular client where they invested in a winery that was based in the Cayman Islands, and you know, those kinds of things, you know, you just have to avoid
exactly, and everybody knows that the best wine in the world comes from the Cayman Islands, right?
Right. Well, time is just starting to run out on us as we wrap up here. Do you have any other thoughts you want to close out with?
Well, I would say this. You know, there's for anybody that's struggling with any kind of a tax problem whatsoever, you know, I like to say there's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. I don't care what kind of a problem you have or how long you've had the problem or who's told you can't fix the problem. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. And the book that you've been mentioning, The IRS Problem Solver, is going to help anybody if you've got a tax problem or not. It's going to help anybody, and as a matter of fact, if you don't have a problem, all the more reason to get the book, because it'll show you how to avoid most of the problems that people come in, you know, that develop in people's lives.
Absolutely, and so if people want to get more info, how can they contact you? How can they get a copy of your book?
Yeah, the best way is right off my website, which is taxhelponline.com. That's all one word, no spaces of any kind, taxhelponline.com, and you can get the book the IRS Problem Solver there, and all of my books, all of my materials are available there, including my latest book, How to Win Your Tax Audit.
Okay, great. And that was taxhelponline.com.
That's right.
All right, awesome. Well, thanks again so much for joining us, Dan. And if you are a physician or someone else serving docs and you want to tell your story, grappling with tough issues like these and want to get on the soapbox for a few minutes, I'd love to share it too in the next Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast. So make sure to check me out on my website, davidenniston.com/physicians, and subscribe to this podcast at drfreedompodcast.com or on iTunes. For the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, this is Dave Denniston. Thanks so much for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and check in again soon.